What you watching, Dave?
It's another disaster, Goliath.
What's a disaster?
That's when bad things happen to people in the world. Things we don't expect. And it's just awful.
Oh, Davey, that is awful.
I sure am glad that no matter what happens, God is there.
God is there?
Sure, Goliath. God is there through the hands of the people who help after a disaster.
Shouldn't we help?
You're right, Goliath.
But how can we help? We're just a boy and a dog.
Even small hands and paws can make a big difference if we all work together.
Let's go ask the grown-ups to help, too.
To see how you can help, contact Lutheran Disaster Response at elca.org/disaster.
The countdown will begin this Sunday afternoon at 1, right here on the radio station you grew up with, Music Radio 138. Oh,
oh my God, what is that? Oh my God, what is that?
What's this? What's this? There's color everywhere. What's this? There's white things in the air. What's this? I can't believe my eyes. I must be dreaming. Wake up, Jack. This isn't fair. What's this? What's this? What's this? There's something very wrong. What's this? There's people singing songs. What's this? The streets are lined with little creatures laughing. Everybody seems so happy. Have I possibly gone daffy? What is this? What's this? The sights, the sounds, they're everywhere and all around. I've never felt so good before. This empty place inside of me is filling up. I simply cannot get enough. I want it, oh, I want it, oh, I want it for my own. I've got to know, it is this place that I have found. What is this?
Oh my God, what is that?
Lesson 13. How does Jesus come to us? Jesus comes to us in Holy Communion. How does Jesus come to us? How does Jesus come to us? Jesus comes to us in Holy Communion. How does Jesus come to us? How does Jesus come to us? Jesus comes to us in Holy Communion. How does Jesus come to us? How does Jesus come to us? Jesus comes to us in Holy Communion.
Yeah.
Lesson 14. What is the food we use on our table? Our table food is not Jesus, but only a gift. What is the food we use on our table? Our table food is not Jesus, it is only a gift. What is the food we use on our table? Our table food is not Jesus, it is only a gift. What is the food we use on our table? Our table food is not Jesus, it is only a gift.
You're listening to WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. There's a little positive affirmation at the beginning of What Is This?
Happy Lent, everybody. Wait, where is my... There we go. Happy Lent, everybody.
Happy Lent. It's Ash Lent. Wednesday, yeah.
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 The Lenten season...
I know
season,
a few ashes.
The yep. Lenten season is upon us, as it were.
Yeah. I remember going to school as a kid, like first, second grade, and then all of a sudden there'd be a teacher with a big, you know, ash spot on the center of their head. I'm like, what's going on there?
Yeah.
I thought they were just dirty. I didn't know anything about religious.
No, it's the... it's
religion,
the
religious,
Catholic
nothing.
Tradition.
Yeah, yeah, I know now. But at the time, I didn't grow up that way. I grew up with two families that were very religious, and then it got to, like, the grandparents, and then we're just done with it. So we never got that CCD or the anything.
So by the time I came along, the Catholic Church had refused to bury my mother's father in a Catholic cemetery because he had given away his only daughter to a Protestant.
Oh.
So not only was there no religion in the house, there was no discussion of religion in the house.
Wow.
So I grew up in a completely non-religious household.
Wow.
And I'll admit, I was a little jealous of, you know, the Catholic kids all going to Sunday school and Cub Scouts back when that was a very Catholic thing to do.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was super Catholic where you were, but it
yeah,
was...
Yeah, a lot of Catholics, yeah.
It was super Catholic where I was. Like, yeah. All the Catholic kids were in Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts.
I was in there, and then I remember having to be reverent. That was one of the things, being a Boy Scout or a Cub Scout.
Yeah.
You had to be, like, thrifty and reverent. I understood thrifty, you know? Because of my dad, because he was very thrifty. But reverend, I didn't understand.
Yeah.
I only knew, like, the GD words, like, the swear. GD. That was a big one. But, yeah, I didn't know anybody who was pious.
No, I didn't go to church. These are things that I've started doing later in life.
Now, of course, I've given myself up to Jesus Christ, and I work for the Lord himself.
Well,
so
that's good.
But it took me a long time. And I'm trying to spread the message here on WMFO as often as I can.
I've gone the other way because Jesus saves and Satan invests, and I'm looking to build a big portfolio.
That's right. But, yeah, my first real brush was in college. I took a course in religion just because I knew, you know, there's a lot of things going on out there with, like, Protestants and Catholics and Jewish people. I had no clue, you know, no idea. And I still, you know, I got the basic amount now, and I'm good. You know, I don't need to know more than that. If you don't believe in anything, you got to have your own faith, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. You got to have faith. Otherwise, you don't keep going. That's just it. You got to have hope. You got to have faith. Otherwise, what's the point?
I dated Catholic girls. I dated Jewish girls.
Oh, they were
girls.
The dirtiest girls, the Catholic girls.
No.
Really?
I dated the good Catholic girls.
No, not
they weren't
me.
Good by the time I was done with
them.
No,
they weren't, yeah.
But I dated the good Catholic girls.
No, not me. I was going out with the same Catholic girls, and they were dirty on the side.
I dated Jewish girls. I mean, it just none of it.
Jewish girls are dirty, too.
No, they're not.
Yeah,
they're,
they were pretty
no,
dirty.
No.
The ones I did were dirty.
I don't know where you're finding dirty Jewish girls.
I found dirty. Most of my girls are dirty.
I'll tell you that.
Most of my girls are very dirty. But no, at BU, well, you know, they have to be a little more careful, I think.
I dated the president of Chabad House for a little while.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I joined a Jewish fraternity just so I can get a couple of Jewish girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was worth it. It was all right. I wouldn't do it again. Looking back, I'm like, yeah.
I love Seder.
Yeah, me too.
But Passover Seder is awesome.
Yeah.
Like every religion that's not Judaism needs to sit down and figure out something as cool as Seder.
Yeah. My favorite holiday is Sukkot. That one's good. I don't know, we got this religious thing there. But that first thing was religion for retarded. It's not even the retarded. It's religion for retarded. They weren't even called the retarded at the time. It was from the 1940s. The Ligurian Publication Center in Ligurie, Missouri. I may be mispronouncing that. It could just be Lungi, Missouri. But they've been around 100 years, and they produced this this old 7-inch disc that somebody found in the thrift store. It was a 33 1/3. And it just says, what is the food we use on our table?
Yep.
And that was lesson 13. And then the one after us, how does Jesus come to us?
That used to be a staple on the old HB Inc. radio show way, way back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
For those who've been
Paul Day
following me around on this radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And then for all of our good friends over in Belmont, Janine Brady and the Bright Singers with I'm a Mormon.
That's a great one. I love it.
Feel great about being a Mormon, kids.
They put some cash into that one. You can hear it. They got a good band behind that.
That's good production value. You know, it's not a priest with a microphone and no backing band.
What I love about these lessons 13 and 14 is they're very easy and they're pretty much one liners and the guy just sings it to you.
Yeah.
And it's religion for retarded, but I'll tell you, I mean, I got a little bit of a brain on me and I'm just like, what was he telling me again? How does Jesus come to us? He comes in Holy Communion. That's it. And then lesson 14 was, what's the food we have on the table? The table food's not Jesus. It's a gift. That's what we learned from those two things.
Yeah, you only eat Jesus on Sundays.
Yeah. You ever get communion?
Oh, yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's like a wafer thin mint, isn't it?
The Episcopal Church, also known as the Anglican Church, also known as the C of E.
The C of E.
Does not require baptism to receive communion. It's at the discretion of your local.
You can lie and just get it, right?
Well, you're
not supposed to, but you can.
I would never do that.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm sure people have.
Out of basic respect for people's faith, I would never walk into a Catholic church and take communion. But at the Episcopal Church, I do because they're like, come on up, have communion, have a relationship with Jesus.
Have a sandwich, a little communion.
Give us $20 and we'll talk about baptizing you.
There's food on the table. It's not Jesus. Go and get the communion. That's him.
Exactly.
And then come and have a sandwich, maybe a lemonade.
And I have to say,
iced tea.
Even though the Anglicans, Episcopalians, C of E, whatever you want to call them, are basically lapsed Catholics.
Mm.
Because the whole thing comes about because the Pope would not grant Henry VIII a divorce.
Yeah,
so
he knew how to have fun, huh?
So Henry VIII said, "All right, we're done with the Pope. We're starting our own thing."
He had like six wives.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he basically took everything about the Catholic Church, changed a couple of words, and said,
"I'm making a new religion, right?
We're Anglicans now."
Yeah.
So if you've been to
those are the Jews.
Yeah.
No, those are the Episcopalians.
Those are the Episcopalians. The Jews got a whole different thing going on. They're like, Jesus, who is that guy?
They did a lot of wandering.
Yeah.
That's what the Jews did.
We hear Jesus is a nice guy. We're not convinced that he's that important.
Yeah.
So if you've been to a Catholic Mass.
Sure.
And I've you've been to an Episcopalian Mass,
mm-hmm.
you will recognize them.
I think I've been to one of those.
They are pretty much the same thing. The songs are better in the Anglican Church, I will say.
Tambourines.
Yeah. And everyone can participate. You know, there's no, you must be baptized in the Catholic Church to go get communion. Everyone can get communion.
Mm.
And after you've been sitting there, bouncing up and down for a few minutes or for half an hour.
You're getting hungry.
You're getting hungry. You need a little wine to get through the last part of it.
Yeah, that's the real sale, I think.
Yeah.
It's not the wafer, it's the wine.
Although COVID, it's just kind of like, we're not doing the wine thing.
Yeah,
anymore.
Everybody like drools on it and stuff, right?
Like,
it's kind of gross.
They should have like those little, those little cups that they give you the pills in.
You know what I never liked?
And just line them up and be like, Either that, or could they have, you know how they use the squirt bottle?
It's like, here's a little Dixie cup of pills. Take this instead.
You know how they use the squirt bottle at football games?
Sure.
Because the guy's got the thing on?
Yeah.
Could they just, like, squirt the wine into your mouth with the squirt bottle?
That'd be good. That's a good idea. I was down in Mexico once at Carlos and Charlie's, and a guy, he blew a whistle, and he pointed at me, and he took, like, it was almost like a little flower pot, and he blew in the flower pot, and wine went sailing across the room. And went all over me. He put a little bib on me first, and everybody was like cheering me on. I'm like, I got to do this. Whatever it is, I'm doing it. I was like, 22, 23. And I'm like, people are putting bibs on me. I'm in a foreign country. And I'm like, I got to do this. This is pretty cool.
Why are you spreading plastic in back of me?
I almost missed the ship, actually. And what's funny is like some girl grabbed me, and she's like, Chris, let's go, let's go. And she threw me in a cab. I have no idea who that girl was, but she got me back to the cruise ship on time.
Nice.
I had no idea who she was.
Nice.
And I was on, it was a 4-day, 3-night on my first cruise ever on Carnival Cruise. And that was a great trip.
Good time.
Man, it was so fun. I went just by myself. And I remember, I think I told you this one before, I walked up to the top deck and I was just looking around the cruise ship. And all of a sudden, this naked guy walks by me and he's got this giant Hawaiian drink. And I'm drinking the same Hawaiian drink. It was the drink of the day. And he's like, how you doing? And I'm just like, what is this? And I realized it was a nude deck.
Nice.
I didn't even know.
Well, there's a nude deck on the ship.
On the Carnival ship. I don't know if they still have them anymore. But yeah, this guy was naked as a jaybird. It was only like in the first 5 minutes. It was like the ship was sailing at like 4. And this is like 3 in the afternoon.
And this guy's
was up
already
there,
got his clothes on.
He was up there early. Cruising. Darn. He was cruising for, a hot 22-year-old, and or just me, He was just like, whoever comes up this ladder, he's my guy.
Yikes.
I laughed. I just started laughing. I was just like, what is going on here?
They don't show the nude deck in the TV commercials.
Now, you know what you do on a cruise? And this is funny because I never realized this until, after doing, I've been on about a dozen now, and they're always fun. But you get down to the people that know what they're doing. They put their luggage in, and they automatically have a handbag that has a bathing suit in it, or they have their bathing suit underneath. They just go immediately to the pool and get the drink of the day, and they just hang out there. And those are the people that never get out of the pool or leave the sun deck. That's why those cruise ships are always just filled. They're fun, but you can never really get to the pool area. They're always just packed. So we have a lot of stuff here on What Is This Again this week.
You have a lot to get to.
We start a little religion there. I have some fun stuff from WSBK, Channel 38, and WLVI, Channel 56 in Boston.
I remember those stations.
I have like the opening of WLVI going on the air by Dana Hersey, who did the movie Loft, as well as many other things on WSBK. It was funny because he was kind of like, remember early Comedy Central and Penn and Teller, like Penn Jillette was doing every single commercial on Comedy Central. Yeah. He was the voice of Comedy Central for like the first 5 years. Yeah. That was just be like, the kids in the hall this week.
That was Dana Hersey.
On Comedy Central. That was Dana Hersey.
He was the one guy on the payroll.
Yeah.
He was like the only guy that worked there.
It's great. So I have an early thing here. A few years ago on Time Travel, I did early Saturday morning in Boston. And I have a whole bunch of clips from there. So I thought I'd give a little bit of a little taste of what it was like being a kid in the 70s or 80s here in Boston. So this is the opening for WSBK TV 38 in Boston. The sign-on from the year 1987 here on What Is This?
It was a good year for me.
We are here until 7 p.m. My name's Chris Earle, and this is Derek Gary. And I hope you enjoy the next hour and 40 minutes of What Is This? Enjoy.
Good morning. This is WSBK-TV in Boston, Massachusetts. WSBK-TV is owned and operated by New Boston Television Incorporated, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Storer Broadcasting Company, and operates on UHF Channel 38, as authorized by the Federal Communications Commission. WSBK-TV studios and offices are located at 83 Leo Birmingham Parkway. The transmitter and antenna are located at 140 Cabot Street, Needham, Massachusetts. And now, our national anthem.
Oh, This is TV 38, WSBK-TV, Boston.
Between a meteor and a comet?
Well, it's, it'll be fun to find out, won't it?
It's fun to find out makes an ocean wave wave.
My name is Karen.
My name is Karen.
It's fun to find out what your voice really sounds like.
It's fun to find out what it's really like in space. This is the captain speaking. Come in, Earth.
Boston's Museum of Science, where it's fun to find out.
Why does he have such funny little front legs?
I found the perfect place to take the whole family, the New England Aquarium. I found the perfect place to take the whole family, the New England Aquarium.
Oh, Daddy, you have great surprises.
Oh, yeah, come on, around here are the sharks.
Look at you.
Nino, look at that.
How does that feel, Karen?
Hey, look how close they are.
What a giant turtle.
I can look like a penguin.
Look like mirrors.
Hey, Mom, the dolphin show.
The New England Aquarium, where families get together.
The year of 1965, a screen of darkness descended upon the Earth like a vapor from outer space. It spread across the world, threatening to turn entire cities into blackness. It almost succeeded.
I'm George von Freem. This year, the great electronic guns of Rectangle M opened fire on a blackness that threatened to cover the world. Stay tuned for a special report by Walter Gruen and Charles Collins.
Now, gentlemen,
this is Walter Gruen at a secret meeting in Chicago. Let's listen. I'll be back in a moment.
And gentlemen, this film of blackness has been spreading over the Earth ever since. We finally have a way to stop it. Rectangle M. Rectangle M has its own electronic guns that are capable of destroying the blackness.
Walter Gruen again. I've just been informed that Charles Collins is now on a street corner in New York asking people how they would feel if their city was suddenly buried in blackness.
And it might be caused by an eclipse or something like that. But for everything in the city to turn black? That's impossible.
I wonder how we'd look if all our clothes turned black.
Hey, you ladies would all start to look the same. I don't think you could stand it.
It's really hard to imagine everything black. Black sky, black trees, black buildings. Goodness.
What a dismal world that would be, Mr. Collins.
Thank you for your comments. This is Charles Collins switching you back to the meeting in Chicago.
And gentlemen, right now, as I talk to you, Rectangle M is firing its electronic gun. The screen of blackness is being destroyed. We're going to telecast this as it happens inside one home. Stand by, please.
But I still don't understand, Harry, why they're telecasting from our house and what they mean by the electro or tronic guns.
And what's the screen of blackness, Dad?
You'll both know soon enough.
Hey, what's that light over there going on and off for?
That's Rectangle M signaling that its electronic guns are ready. Now, watch the blackness go out of the world and the color come back in. It'll change everything. There. It started.
Say, something is happening.
I think I'm seeing things.
We're entering a whole new world. Relax and enjoy it.
Harry, you were right. We're in another world.
Look at the walls and the drapes. And gee, look at the furniture. It's completely different.
And the clothes. It's as if I've never seen clothes before.
Look at the colors.
And what about faces? Ever see faces sparkle?
I'm meeting all new people.
That's what happens when the screen of blackness is lifted.
Well, does it happen everywhere, Dad?
Everywhere. Without the screen of blackness around, the whole world is going to look and feel better to you, son.
Wow. Everything sure is colorful.
We just didn't know what we were missing. We just didn't know.
This is Walter Gruen. You have heard it all. From the formation of the first blackness to its defeat by the electronic guns of Rectangle M. All except for one thing. What is the screen of blackness? Have you already guessed? It is the TV screen that brings the world into your home completely covered in black and white. And the electronic guns that are defeating it? Color television. In color sets, there are actual electronic guns that shoot electrons at the colored phosphors on the screen, producing a color picture. Thus has the screen of blackness been defeated. A new era has begun. Only one more thing remaining. What is the secret weapon called Rectangle M? For that answer,
Pardon me, sir.
A special news report has just come in. Stand by, please.
We interrupt this broadcast with a late wire bulletin. We have just received a news release from the National Broadcasting Company. 95.8% of NBC's entire evening schedule will now be in color. The era of color TV has truly arrived. It is news we have long awaited. Now, we return to our broadcast. Stand by for the Rectangle M Report, live from a retail store in Los Angeles.
It's so real.
Such a big picture.
It's called Rectangle M. Most color TV pictures are rounded with the ends completely chopped off and making the color picture appear smaller. That's the way you've seen color TV. Now, look at Rectangle M again. Took years to perfect.
It's like a widescreen movie.
Young man, what's the M for?
Rectangle M means Rectangle Motorola. Motorola developed it.
Well, what's that about the TV having a motor?
No, madam. I said Motorola, not motor. Motorola is the company that gave this country mass-produced color TV on the wide rectangle screen. Motorola helped make this the era of color TV.
For so many years, we sat and we watched the world of blackness go by. Black and white trees, gray skies, black and white clothes, gray faces. And finally, after years of development and perfection, the veil was lifted and a bright rectangle world uncovered. A world of colorful sports, colorful people, colorful drama. A whole new era has begun. An era that can affect the way we dress, the way we design our homes, and the way we live our lives. We have indeed escaped the screen of blackness.
Hello, I'm back to talk directly to you who are listening to this record at home. If you'll return this record to the store where you received it, you'll be presented with a lovely free gift. Just hand it to any clerk in the TV department. And while you're there, take a look at Rectangle Motorola. Well, I guess that's it. I hope you enjoyed the record.
Young man, before you leave, would you repeat again what you were saying about the TV having a rectangle motor?
Oh, no, it's her. Here I go all over again. Madam, I said Motorola. Not motor. Motorola has the rectangle color picture.
So how fantastic was it growing up in the 70s and 80s?
You know, the funny thing about it is, when you think about those Woody Woodpecker cartoons and the Mighty Mouse cartoons and the Tom and Jerry cartoons, like, we grew up watching stuff that was, like, 30 years old.
Right.
You know?
But it was still awesome because it was all syndicated. It was all cheap.
Yeah.
And they threw it on places like WSBK, WLVI. But WLVI, like, from 2 o'clock on, you basically were entertained up until 8 p.m.
But it was also, if you sit down and watch those cartoons now as an adult, you realize how full of sexist and racist stereotypes they are.
Ah.
Because they were made at a time when you could get away with that.
Think so?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some of that,
different
some
time,
of that
though.
Stuff
different
is
time.
Just... I realize that. But, you know, we probably shouldn't have been watching, like, 40-year-old entertainment.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is watching, like, some of the stuff from, like, Mickey Mouse and, you know, the old Bugs Bunny stuff. It was pretty wild. Woody Woodpecker, I don't remember any Nazi imagery in the Woody Woodpecker.
Woody was generally safe.
He was a prick, but he was funny.
Yeah, Woody was meant for kids.
Yeah.
The Tom and Jerry cartoons were meant for kids. The Mighty Mouse and...
Oh, Mighty Mouse had some crazy stuff in
it. And
Bugs
Bunny cartoons and the Max Fleischer stuff wasn't necessarily meant for kids.
Mm.
But by the 1970s, parents were just like, oh, if it's animated, it must be for children.
Right, right.
So, let them sit there and soak this up all afternoon.
And what's funny is those parents were the ones that were, you know, they were the kids of the World War II people that actually went to see those cartoons.
Yeah.
You know, you get to see, like... and we talked about Spielberg in 1941 a couple of weeks ago. There's one point where Robert Stack is in the theater and he's watching Dumbo. And he's got a full house and he's just enjoying Dumbo. And it's like you see only adults in the theater.
Yeah.
And this was in the beginning of the war, right? It was 1941. So, most of these movies would have a newsreel. They'd have cartoons, and then there would be the main feature, and you would show up whenever the hell you wanted.
Yeah.
You weren't there at the beginning. You just wandered in and wandered out whenever.
It's like the opening act for a band.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, do I really want to see Tony okay? No, I don't, so I'll show up two-thirds of the way through his set.
True. Yeah. 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 In the background, the band Necessities. This one got canceled at one point, didn't it? Jungle Book?
Oh, Kipling's been totally canceled.
Yeah.
Because Kipling was a screaming racist.
Yeah. Whatever.
They're rewriting the Roald Dahl books now. Did you
I
hear
saw
this?
That. This is sad.
They're taking the word fat out of them.
And the thing is like, okay. But the thing is people are able to get away with calling people fat still. And I'm a big boy.
I don't know. I'm sensitive over this. I don't know if you can.
Yeah, people. I have a friend. He's a runner. He's a doctor. He was a valedictorian in the class. And he's making fun of a fat guy on Facebook. And everybody's like egging him on. I'm just like, oh, I see. You can still make fun of fat people?
Yeah. No, you can't. You're protected now.
Yeah.
We're taking that word out of the Roald Dahl books.
I hope so.
Leave the Roald Dahl books alone, please.
Yeah.
You know what you do? Give a kid a Roald Dahl book and say this was written at a different time, and this is how we talked back then.
Yeah. You got your James and the Giant Peach, right?
Yeah.
You got your Willy Wonka.
Yep.
What else Roald Dahl did?
Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka's fantastic. Charlie and Chocolate Factory.
But that is an incredibly... this is the interesting thing about it.
It has a bunch of lessons in it.
That is an incredibly dark book.
Yeah.
And a lot of Roald Dahl's stuff is very, very dark.
Yep.
But one of the things that I think a lot of people miss about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is how anti-corporatist it really is.
Mm.
Like... Willy Wonka is not meant to be a sympathetic character.
Yeah.
He is a bad, bad, bad man.
Oh, I don't think so.
He is.
No.
He's a very bad man.
No, I think he's there to teach kids.
No, he's a bad man. And in the original version of that story, the Oompa Loompas were a pygmy tribe from Africa.
Yeah.
That, you know, the benevolent white man had come along and saved from evil Africa.
Sure.
And now he had them living in
somebody
and
had to.
Enslaved in his chocolate factory.
Yep.
He's making his chocolate with slave labor.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
He
loved the Oompa Loompas.
He is.
And they lived a better life.
He loved the Oompa Loompas because he didn't have to pay them.
Mm. No, he paid him in chocolate.
He paid him in chocolate. But this is the thing. But this is what Dahl is getting at in all of this.
Fantastic. Mr. Fox is great. Witches is great. Matilda.
I love Matilda.
They're all very good. And the, the thing is he's dead now. So his legacy, it's the children that are deciding, I need to make more money. How do I make more money in 2023? This man is going to get canceled because people don't want to read about a white man having slaves in a chocolate factory.
They sold the
and to me, that's a stretch.
Well, they sold.
It's supposed to be entertainment for a kid.
They sold the rights to Netflix, and Netflix.
Oh, did they?
Netflix are the ones that are rewriting everything.
Okay, all right. Netflix is. I have a lot of problems with Netflix.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a network. I think it's gotten way too much power than it should. I think it's throwing out very crappy entertainment for people. Occasionally, they throw some money at something good. But for the most part, they're throwing a bunch of money, especially when it first came on and they were looking for stuff. They're just like, here, go make us something. Here's some cash.
Yeah.
And you were seeing anybody had a stand-up special who was an open micer for 6 months.
Well, they had that joke on South Park where they were answering the phone. Netflix, you're greenlit.
Yeah.
Netflix, you're greenlit.
Yeah, you know, pretty much.
And that's pretty much what was going on. And yeah, they did produce a lot of crap. Economic reality has finally hit them.
Mm.
And so they now have to produce less crap. And they've made, to be fair, they've made some good stuff through the years. The Jeffrey Dahmer thing was amazing.
Oh, did you finish it? I never watched
it. Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
Is it good?
I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah,
it's
I'll get
really
around to
good.
It. Tiger King was great.
I didn't watch. I watched the start of Tiger King, and I was like, enough.
It's fantastic. Enough. It's great.
Nah.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm not interested in stories
like
about...
His story is your story, I think.
I'm not interested in stories about
the
crazy
Tiger
people
King.
From Florida.
He's not. He's not just crazy, and he's not from Florida. The woman's from Florida that's his nemesis, his arch nemesis, the cat lady. He's minding his own business. He's with a whole bunch of guys
he's
got tigers.
Yeah, he's not though.
He's like a former cop, and he wants to be a cop, but he's a security officer, and he blasts guns and just gets drunk and gets high all the time with his friends, and he has a bunch of money and runs like a... It's not even like a zoo.
How
it's
is this
just
my
like
story?
His backyard.
How is this my story? How is this anybody's story?
It's the American dream. You get to do what you want. You know, it's like make a little money, have fun with your friends, and don't bother anybody, and nobody will bother you. His problem is he started to bother people.
Yeah.
And as soon as you start bothering other people, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you're in trouble. You got to mind your business. That's the big thing. There's the American dream, and then there's minding your business.
Well, there's not owning a lot of tigers, too. You know, you can have the American dream without a bunch of tigers.
You know, I don't know what kind of farm I would want. I don't think it would be a tiger farm, though.
I don't know of anyone who's
turtles are fun.
Who's owned tigers who's come to a good end. Didn't work out for Mike Tyson. Didn't work out for Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they had tigers forever, and then all of a sudden they're like, I'm done with you.
Yeah.
What about that guy that had the chimpanzee for years with his wife, and then all of a sudden the thing like ate his eyeball?
Well, it ate his face while he told it to calm down. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Shouldn't have those either.
And it's like they're treating it like it's his kid. And like the chimpanzee's like 80 years old at that point.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm done with you. It's like, I'm sick of you.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, let him out. Let him born free, man. You ever see that? That was a great movie, Born Free, like the 70s, and what's his name was in it? Michael York.
I've got the much better version of that movie.
Great song too,
which I haven't gotten to yet. Which is Roar. Have you ever seen Roar?
No. What's that? Is that Beyonce?
No. Roar is one of the most infamous Hollywood movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Tippi Hedren is in it, along with her daughter.
Yeah.
Which one is her daughter? I know this. I know this. I know this.
Tippi.
No.
Her daughter. Tippi and Tippi?
No. Melanie Griffith is Tippi.
Oh,
Hedren's
I love
daughter.
Melanie Griffith.
And
nobody ever says that, but I do.
Yeah.
I love Melanie Griffith.
So Tippi Hedren was married to Noel Marshall, and they took an interest in wildlife.
Okay.
And so they made this movie where they're living in this house in Africa. That's been taken over by lions and tigers and cheetahs.
Yeah.
And
all right.
Everyone who worked on the movie got mauled by big cats.
Really? What was the name of this movie?
Roar.
Roar.
Yeah.
Wow, it sounds great.
And it's her husband was a naturalist, and they actually, you know, they spent the rest of their lives like donating to animal sanctuaries and animal preservation causes.
Yeah.
And this movie was meant to sort of promote that whole idea. Instead, it became infamous for everybody going to the hospital because they were getting mauled by lions.
Interesting. It says 1981 it came out.
Yeah, they actually started filming it in the 1970s. They had to stop a couple of times because everyone was getting mauled by lions.
Wow. It says a ferocious comedy, Roar.
Yes.
And Jean Debon, cinematography.
Yeah.
Tippi Hedren.
Melanie Griffith,
John Marshall, Jerry Marshall, Noel Marshall, the Marshall triplets.
John DeBont got his part of his head chewed off by a lion.
Oh, my God.
Melanie Griffith.
Budget of $17 million and only made two.
Melanie Griffith had to go to the hospital after she got mauled by a lion.
How do I not? I've never heard of this. This is great.
This is a great movie.
This is great. I'm going to watch this tonight.
I don't know if you can. I've got it on Blu-ray.
I'm going to find it.
One of those films that's...
I go to the dark webs.
Incredibly difficult to find.
Most people go to the dark web for, like, drugs and porn, but I go for, like, Roar.
Yeah.
You know? Just weird stuff.
That's what you should go there for, because this is a...
I go for things that are being edited by society for me.
It's a really fun film, and some of
Where's that Scooby-Doo episode I used to like? Oh, it's on the dark web now.
Some of the animal attacks are actually in the film.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez, remember like the Twilight Zone when that helicopter like took Vic Morrow's head off?
Yeah.
And they ended up putting it in the movie, and that was a Spielberg episode, too, of Twilight Zone.
They left a little bit of it in. They didn't leave all of it in.
Well, you don't see his head flying off, but it's just like, it's horrible. It's like, just leave it out of the movie.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, I don't know.
Well, what about the Rust thing, where they're finishing the movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Rust with Alec Baldwin?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I was going to make a nice mix of that. I'll have it here for you next week. But I have a nice PSA by Alec Baldwin, and I remixed it. It's the Rust remix.
Nice.
I'm not finished with it yet, but I'll have it for you next week.
The cinematographer's husband, Helena Hutchins' husband.
Born free in the background.
Dropped his civil suit against Alec Baldwin in exchange for being named an executive producer on the film.
You're kidding.
So that he is now a full-profit participant.
Talk about, this is American capitalism at its best.
He's probably going to make more money off of that than he would suing Baldwin.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, being a family member of the person that died, it's just awful.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing you got to think of. It's like the survivors of the person who died, that's the tragedy. And there's no amount of money, you're not getting that person back.
We talked about this last week. Did you see All Quiet on the Western Front?
I started to watch it. I loved it, but I only got 15 minutes in and I fell asleep.
Yeah, it's not...
It was late. It was like the fourth thing I watched that night.
So you've basically seen the prologue at this point where the uniform comes from.
Yeah, very cool.
It gets better. There is a sequence about two-thirds of the way through the movie that is one of the most harrowing things I have ever seen.
Yeah.
And I've seen all of the big war movies. This is...
Is it like Spielberg and the beginning of, Saving Private Ryan, the World War II storm in Normandy?
It's better than that.
Really?
Because the problem with that sequence, and that is a great...
Which is just like a movie.
Yeah, that
it's
is...
It's just like Medal of Honor.
That is a great sequence. But the problem with that sequence is so much is going on around it that you can't really ground yourself in what's happening until they actually begin the assault on the pillbox.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first point where you can actually understand who these characters are and what they're doing.
Sure.
There is a sequence in All Quiet on the Western Front. I'm not spoiling anything if you know the story, and most people do.
Yeah.
Where the Germans take one of the French trenches, and they clear the French out, and they are occupying the trench.
Yeah.
And then the low rumble begins. And the tanks come out of the fog toward them.
Yeah.
Followed by the guys with the flamethrowers.
Oh, my God.
And what happens for the next 20 minutes is riveting.
Yeah.
It's riveting and terrifying and one of the best sequences I have ever seen in a war movie.
Yeah.
Because it's awesome. Just the whole way that it unfolds, you have the sense of place and what's going on around you at all times in a way that Saving Private Ryan just doesn't do it.
Yeah, I thought I liked the first third of Saving Private Ryan. Then I thought it was crap, especially when Matt Damon showed up. Get rid of him.
Yeah.
He sucks.
Well,
him and his big, he had just gotten his teeth whitened and stuff. He's a movie star. And it's like, what are we doing with this guy? Get him out. There's a German movie called The Bridge from 1959. And I saw that at UMass in my German film class. And fantastic. It was about all these young kids and they join up the German army, because they want to be patriots. And And then all of a sudden, they're all on their own, and there's like maybe six of them, and they're guarding a bridge, and they're like 13 and 14 years old.
Yep.
And the soldiers come, and they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, chaos ensues. It's a great, great movie about the war. And it's very hard to find. It finally came out, I think it was a Criterion film about 4 or 5 years ago, and I ended up picking it up. And it's such a great war movie. It's one of the best.
There's a Polish film that I would highly, highly recommend. I'd recommend if you watch All Quiet on the Western Front, check out 1917 as well.
Oh, yeah. I love 1917. Because
that's a great film.
They did that really well, I thought.
All Quiet on the Western Front does it better than 1917 did because it feels completely real from beginning to end. But there's another great film I'll recommend. It's a Polish film called Come and See.
Nice.
And basically, it's similar to All Quiet on the Western Front in that it is the story of a young boy who wants to go off to war.
Yeah.
And this is during World War II, Poland, the occupation by the Germans. And what happens to this kid over the course of this movie is insane.
Yeah.
And because what you see this kid who wants to go to war, it's kind of like All Quiet on the Western Front. He wants to go to war for the glory and the heroism and all the rest of that, and doesn't really understand how to hate.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't understand why the older soldiers hate the Germans. And over the course of the film, he discovers all the reasons why he should hate the Germans.
Yep.
And by the end of the film, he has been completely transformed from this innocent, hopeful kid into this hate-filled, ready to rip the next German limb from limb.
He's become a soldier.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's become a soldier. He's become programmed.
But it's not. He's not programmed. It's the experiences that he has of seeing the Germans in action that turn him into this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it's something that goes really, really well with All Quiet on the Western Front because they're similar. They're European films that both aim for a very, very high level of realism in how they portray what happens.
So in the very beginning here, we had a whole bunch of stuff in there. 1987, the WSBK TV 38 sign-on had Dana Hersey of the Movie Loft in there. Now this guy, he broadcast at least, 20, 25 years?
Yeah.
And he hosted the Movie Loft, which was basically showing a movie. And it would be like, it wasn't even like a Friday, Saturday night. It was like every night he hosted the Movie Loft. And he always had commentary in between the movies. It's really cool. And it had a couple of other commercials in there for New England Aquarium, Museum of Science. I remember seeing those almost every day when I got home with Uncle Dale Dorman, who was later on Kiss 108. And it made me want to go to the Museum of Science and the New England Aquarium, which in the 70s, we actually got what was called a field trip. And you could actually go to these things. There was actually a budget at school, and you would have your parents sign a permission slip, and you would go to the Museum of Science or the New England Aquarium for the day, and they'd set up like a lunch upstairs for you, and it was awesome. And what I noticed in both of those commercials, and you commented on this, I noticed this yesterday when I put them together, both of the girls are named Karen.
Yeah.
And I feel so bad at this point, you know, as bad as I can feel over it. It's just ridiculous. Of anybody that's called Karen that's our age. Because you know nobody's naming their baby Karen at least for the next 10 years.
I'd consider it.
Which is kind of sad. It.
Toughen her up.
Yeah? You're gonna change Bobby's name to Karen?
No, because that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
That's a whole different thing. Yeah. Well, I might change his name to Chad.
Chad, huh?
Chad.
Yeah.
Chads and Karens.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm just like, oh, man, that's too bad. But I used to love that, just like going to the space and she's talking into the phone. That was high-tech stuff in the 70s, to talk and hear your voice. That was like, what?
Well,
this is mind-blowing.
They had the computer you could play chess against, or tic-tac-toe against.
Yeah,
that was a big deal.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, really cool. Very cool.
And every kid who walked into the Museum of Science in the 1970s and walked into that room in the back would stand there and go, it's fun to find out what makes an ocean wave wave.
Right.
Because they had the big wave tank.
My name is Karen and walking like a penguin.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of that. Yeah. It brings back a lot of great memories.
Classics.
I actually got a little bit more on there. I have the Kool-Aid Man. I have Robillard. If you remember him, he's the guy that eats candy all the time and then he starts selling fruit.
You know what you got to find if you don't have it?
What's that?
Is the sign-on from Channel 56.
Okay.
Because in the mornings, they used to play the test pattern, and they played Mico Minardo's Cantina theme over it.
Right.
And then Dale Dorman came on and said, hey, welcome to, you know, Channel 56.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
Because I used to wake up at like 6:30 and watch AM Weather on PBS.
They're like, we're going to get into the Star Wars thing.
And they'd have weather, and they'd have like the pilot's report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That'd be on until like 6:50, and Channel 56 came on at 7.
Let me see if we get it right here. Let's see if this is it. Here we go. WLVI sign on. This says from 1986.
Yeah, that should be it.
Let's see.
This is WLVI-TV, Cambridge, Boston, Massachusetts. Now commencing test pattern.
This guy was the voice of LVI, too.
WLVI-TV transmitter is located in Needham, Massachusetts. General offices and studios are located at 75 Morrissey Boulevard, Boston, Massachusetts, 02125.
Still are.
What's funny, too, is there used to be all these color bars. You'd have this loud, loud noise.
Yep.
Right? And this was kind of the sign-on you do for a radio station, too. Even WMFO here, we had our sign-ons up until we went automated in, 2010?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that doesn't sound like Star Wars to me.
No, this is different music.
Yeah. That sounds almost like the James Bond thing. There's some Shirley Bassey or something.
What year is this, 1986?
86. So this is probably this is 3 years after Return of the Jedi, so people were Star Wars'd out at this point. There was actually I like to call it the dark era of Star Wars, which is like around 84 to 89. There's really like no Star Wars.
Yeah, when they were making the droids figures?
That's right, yeah. Everything was like 40 cents at KB Toys. Oh, yeah, I remember this too.
Yep.
This one was always good too. They would have images of all these places you would like to visit as a youth, but as you get older, you're like, nah, I'm good.
V66 used to sign off on Sunday nights with the Eagles doing Hotel California.
Sure. Rosie was on there. Remember Rosie? She was a V66 VJ.
Do I remember Rosie?
Rosie O'Donnell?
Oh.
She was a V66 DJ.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. That was one of her earliest jobs.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, yep. And then she had her cush balls years later and took over the world.
Wow.
Now she's just sad.
She got her Fox special.
Yeah. No, I'm happy for Whoopi Goldberg. I'm glad she's still around. You know, because she could have gone away too. And
everyone's begging her to leave that show.
Oh, The View?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched Liam Neeson on The View, and they're all just harping over. It's like Joy Behar there. What is it? Behar or Bar or whatever it is. She's like drooling over the guy. And it's like, you can't. Why are the ladies still allowed to do that? Because you know me, I go on something and girls are always fawning all over me. I'm like, I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know?
Apparently he was uncomfortable.
Yeah. There's birds, there's seagulls, there's Russian waves.
Yeah.
So this was getting you ready for cartoons the Baba Papas at 5 a.m. Yeah,
this is your standard like sign-on B-roll. Isn't America great?
Yeah, yeah. And it was literally all over the country for all the local channels. Star Spangled Banner, the Sierra Club did the photography.
Yep.
It was funny because it's like 1986, but like the reel was from like 1951 because they didn't want to pay for it.
Yeah, no one ever updated that reel.
Yeah. Oh, this is a sign-on too. Some Jewish fella.
What's this guy sign-on for?
WLVI.
Is it Passover? No.
Should I pass over him?
I don't know.
Hero Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with
he's giving a little he's giving a little sermon in the morning.
Good for him.
It's Rabbi Abraham Halbfinger.
It seems
We were talking about Goldfinger and here's Halbfinger.
It seems to me that they used to rotate between a bunch of different people, like one day would be Catholic and one day would be the rabbi and
next day's the Baba Papas.
Yeah.
I remember if you were up for the national anthem, you were up early.
Yeah.
It was literally like, you know, you were a kid and you had to get up to pee or you were sick. That was the only reason to be up that early.
Cambridge, Boston. Gerald R. Walsh, president and general manager. WLVI-TV is a television station of the Gannett Broadcasting.
Now it's the WB, right?
WLVI-TV.
Didn't it become the WB eventually?
It was the WB and then the WB and the CW merged. And I don't know what they're doing with it now.
Yeah, I miss Uncle Dale.
Our mailing address is Post Office Box 56.
I don't think we're getting our Star Wars theme from this one, though.
Let's give it a second, see what it does.
Throughout our broadcast day are mechanically reproduced. WLVI-TV's microwave unit is KMN-79.
Wow, that's a good microwave unit.
That is a good microwave unit.
What's this? Is a gorilla running down the street? Oh, here we go. Now it's getting good. They're like,
oh, it's Bozo!
No kidding. How could we forget Bozo?
That's right. Bozo's big top.
Yeah, he was a bit much. But this is before Ritalin and stuff, too.
Yeah.
So it's like you really had to be like, all right, I'm excited. What the hell? It's 5 a.m. Get yourself some cereal. What was your go-to cereal? Was it a sugary one?
Always sugary. I kind of rotated through them.
Did you?
I went with whatever had the best prize.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good way to go, actually, now that you mention
it. So, you know, if somebody had, like, Star Wars stuff in the box, I wanted that.
Yeah.
You know, like, who's got the good prize? Give me the good prize.
We always had, like, Wheaties and Cheerios and Raisin Bran.
Oh, no, I got
We never had, really, the sugary
stuff.
I had
the sugary cereal. I went through. The only one that I never got was Super Sugar Crisp, because that was...
Is that the one with the teddy bear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Golden Bear?
Golden Bear.
Or Sugar Bear.
Sugar Bear.
That was the one that, like, even
Sugar Smacks.
In the early 1970s, like, all the pediatricians started coming out and all the dentists started coming out saying, please, for the love of God, do not feed this to your child.
Yeah.
And parents listened to that. But everything else was okay.
Here's a Sugar Smacks guy.
Say good morning with a Sugar Smacks.
Dig 'em.
Just one breakfast starts.
It's like a frog that eats cereal.
Yeah.
Dig 'em.
He's not the same guy. There was Honey Bear, and then there was Sugar Bear, right?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that frog's airplane?
You know what's funny is you always had this dad that was like in his 30s, and he'd have like 15-year-old kids.
That's how.